to another edition of America's Godly Heritage.
Did you know that America's first constitution was a complete bust and only lasted for a few years? Stay tuned to find out more. But first, hucke pips, it's time to show some gooey marshmallow love for America's Godly Heritage by clicking on the like and subscribe buttons. Thank you!
In today's edition, we are continuing the series on the U.S. Constitution. God may not be directly named in the Constitution, but the Constitution has His fingerprints all over it. In the first episode on this series, we looked at how the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution worked hand in hand. Now, what some of you may not know is that in between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, the United States was actually governed by a document called the Articles of Confederation. Wait, what? What are these Articles of Confederation? Well, let's back up a bit. Back when the war began in April 1775, to the surprise of nearly everyone, this ragtag, poorly financed, poorly manned, poorly equipped, and somewhat disorganized Continental Army somehow managed to hold its own against the greatest military power on earth. Surprise, surprise. And after about a year of a mixed bag of successes and failures against this army, the people governing the country started thinking, we might actually have a chance here, and we need to start thinking of ourselves not anymore as British colonists, but now we should be thinking of ourselves as Americans, as our own country. So, on June 7, 1776, Richard Henry Lee, a delegate from Virginia, proposed the Lee Resolution to the Second Continental Congress. And the Lee Resolution said, quote, "These United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states." In other words, Lee was saying, we need to declare our independence from Great Britain. In response to Lee's popular resolution, 4 days later, the Second Continental Congress proposed three committees. The first committee was to compose a Declaration of Independence. Yes, that would be the Declaration of Independence. The second committee was to fashion a plan, quote, "for forming foreign alliances," unquote. And the third committee was to, quote, "prepare and digest the form of a confederation." We are going to focus on this third committee, which is the committee that created the Articles of Confederation. That was their form of confederation that they created. Now, by this point in time, the leaders of the colonies were fed up with having a heavy-handed, strong, centralized government, because that is one of the reasons why they declared independence from Great Britain. One of the reasons they were fighting the Revolutionary War was because they were sick of this heavy-handed centralized government. Therefore, they didn't want to create another strong central government. Instead, they decided to have the colonies join together in a confederation. A confederation is a union of states that remain sovereign over their own territories while working together for certain common purposes. Article 2 in the Articles of Confederation demonstrates this by saying, "Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the United States." Some examples of the colonies' common purposes were waging war against Great Britain, coining money, the relationships with the Native Americans, and operating a centralized post office. Now, this wasn't the first time that the colonies had seriously considered joining together into a confederation. Over 20 years earlier, Benjamin Franklin had studied various forms of government, and he was most impressed with the confederation of the Haudenosaunee, which were six Native American nations that had joined together in a confederation in central and western New York. In 1754, he met with delegates from other colonies in Albany, New York, in what was called the Albany Congress, and there he proposed the Albany Plan of Union to unite the colonies into a confederacy. Even though it received support from those who attended the Albany Congress, when they took it back home and proposed it to their colonial legislatures, both the colonial legislatures and the British authorities over those colonies said, "I don't think so. Not gonna happen." Even though it failed, the Albany Plan of Union was significant because it was the first time the colonies seriously considered having one centralized government. A few months after the Revolutionary War began, in July 1775, Benjamin Franklin again proposed the colonies unite into a confederation. But his ideas weren't even voted upon because the delegates had not yet come round to the idea of independence from Great Britain. However, a year later, they were ready. John Dickinson was the chairman of the committee to, quote, prepare and digest the form of a confederation, unquote, and the principal writer of the Articles of Confederation. He took several of Franklin's ideas and molded them into this new confederation. The most long-lasting part of the Articles is found in Article 1, where he styled, or named, the confederation the United States of America. Thus, what were once 13 separate British colonies were now the 13 American states united together. Unfortunately, Dickinson didn't stay to fight for his firm League of Friendship, as he called it in Article 3. He was just about ready to submit his articles to the Second Continental Congress when Thomas Jefferson nipped him to the post and submitted the Declaration of Independence right ahead of him. And the delegates were ready to vote for freedom. They were ready to vote for independence. Dickinson said, "It doesn't make any sense. We can't vote to become independent if we haven't even voted on how we're going to have our own centralized government. How can we leave one government and have no government that we're going to have run our country?" The man had a point. But that apparently didn't really bother the delegates at the Congress. So they went ahead and voted in favor of the Declaration of Independence. Dickinson was obviously not happy about this. He had abstained from voting so that the vote could be unanimous, but then he resigned from the Second Continental Congress and went and joined the war effort. Eventually, he rose through the ranks of the Continental Army and became a brigadier general. After considerable debate and fighting and revision over a whole nother year, the Second Continental Congress watered down the articles as Dickinson had written them. They watered down his ideas for guaranteed civil rights and for a legislature that had authority over the states. They finally adopted their version of the Articles on November 15, 1777. The Articles were then sent to the 13 states for ratification, and they had to be ratified by all 13 states. This makes sense because you can't have a union of 13 states if only 11 or 12 have ratified the governing document. It took a while for the states to accept and ratify the Articles of Confederation. Some of the issues that they had were how the states would be represented in Congress and what would happen in the frontier land to the west. A lot of the states had conflicting claims over that land out there. So the Articles finally became the law of the land when Maryland ratified them on March 11, 1781. Throughout all of this, Congress had continued to meet and to govern. After all, they had been meeting before the Revolutionary War even broke out. They continued to meet during the Revolutionary War, and they were respected by the people of the country, and somebody had to make the decisions. So they just continued meeting. But now they finally have official authority to be meeting and to be making decisions for the country. So they went from being the Second Continental Congress to being just plain Congress, under the Articles of Confederation. Now that they were entitled to act, they did so, and they did two things that are noteworthy. One is they signed the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which officially ended the Revolutionary War. They also enacted the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. This prohibited slavery, organized the territory between the Mississippi and Ohio rivers, the Northwest Territory, and outlined how these areas would be admitted into the Union as states. However, the weaknesses of this Congress quickly became apparent. Article 5 stipulates that Congress would be unicameral, which means it only has one house, whereas today we have two. That house governed under the principle that each state could send up to 7 delegates, but then, when it came to voting, each state only had one vote per state, no matter how many delegates had been sent. This ticked off the larger states, and they had a fair point. If you look at the populations, it seems kind of unfair that, according to the U.S. Census, it is estimated that Pennsylvania had about 335,000 people, whereas Delaware had 37,000 people. That's a big difference in population, and yet both states had one equal vote in Congress. It also became quickly apparent that the government created by the Articles of Confederation did not work well. One main reason is that the Articles, although they set up a legislature, they did not set up an executive or judicial branch. So although the legislature could make laws, they had no way of enforcing them. That can be a little awkward. Hey, we said you have to do this. Make me. It doesn't work well. Another reason the Articles didn't work well is that Congress didn't have the power to tax. The Articles did say that the states had power to tax and that they were supposed to give a proportion of their money to Congress based on the value of their lands. So again, the bigger states would be giving more money to Congress because they had more land and more value. Another touchy issue. But the states often didn't comply. They didn't turn over all or some of the money they were supposed to. So Congress was constantly lacking finances. This issue had plagued the Second Continental Congress throughout the Revolutionary War. So as soon as the Articles became the law of the land with Maryland's ratification in March 1781, Congress proposed an amendment to the Articles saying that they would be granted the ability to levy taxes. 12 of the 13 states thought this was a fair idea, and they voted yes. But Rhode Island voted no. Because of that one veto, the amendment was squashed. So this became another weakness in that one state could basically hold everybody else hostage. You do what I want, or I'm going to vote no against your proposed amendment. One final major failing of the Articles of Confederation is that Congress had no authority to regulate foreign or interstate commerce. This quickly led to issues between the states, particularly those that shared a border that has some kind of water along the border, a river or a bay, that kind of a thing. For example, Virginia and Maryland disputed over the use of the Potomac River. They both appointed commissioners who, of course, suggested regulations that would favor their own state. And so, of course, the bickering continued. Finally, George Washington stepped in and invited the commissioners from Maryland and Virginia to go to Mount Vernon, where they hashed out an agreement. And many of the points in that agreement are still in use today. After the Revolutionary War ended, the United States was floundering, particularly economically. The war had emptied the coffers. The states were in great debt to European nations and to European and American merchants. And, as we just discussed, Congress didn't have the authority to levy taxes or regulate commerce, so it struggled to pay these debts. Basically worthless paper money flooded the country, and this led to massive inflation. Today, we are familiar with massive inflation. You go to a store, you go to get gas, and prices are much higher than they were just a few years ago. It makes life a lot harder when your money doesn't go as far or buy as much as it used to. Just as now, people then were struggling financially. The states were in big trouble, and Congress couldn't do much to address those problems. As I just mentioned, American merchants were owed a great deal of money, much of it by the states, but also some by individuals who had bought items on credit. Not surprisingly, these merchants wanted to be paid back. The merchants of Massachusetts took it to the next level by convincing their legislature to pass a bunch of high taxes. They needed to raise taxes so that the state could pay their debts to the merchants. Well, many citizens struggled to pay these high taxes because of inflation. Their money wasn't going as far. How are they going to pay even higher taxes? In addition, merchants began demanding that when people came into their stores, they would pay in cash for what they bought. Now, at this point in time, it was most common for people to open a line of credit and to buy things on credit and then pay it back at a certain point in time. Farmers, in particular, in February, they don't have a lot of money. They plant their crops, they do their thing, and in October, when they are harvesting their crops, suddenly they have a lot of money, and then they can pay their bills. Often, they would also barter or trade some of their crops to help pay those bills or to purchase new items. The merchants understood that, and they worked with that system. But the merchants wanted to be paid now, and they wanted to be paid in cash. Well, farmers couldn't afford to pay until their crops were harvested, so they quickly ran up a lot of debt, which they couldn't pay. The merchants would go to the authorities and start bankruptcy proceedings against them, and the authorities started seizing the farms. War veterans also struggled because few had actually been paid for their military service. Among these was Captain Daniel Shays. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had served in the military in the Revolutionary War to help create this new country, and I had been through all of that pain and suffering and hardship and didn't get paid for it, and then you have some pencil pusher coming and saying, oh, because you're not paying your debts, which we're partly responsible for because we never paid you, we're going to take your horse or your farm or your house, I would be pretty ticked off. That is really unfair. So, in 1786, some of those who found themselves in financial dire straits attempted to resolve their problems peacefully by sending petitions to the Massachusetts legislature, asking members to address debt relief. However, when the legislature adjourned for the summer, they hadn't even considered these petitions. So the desperate farmers marched on Northampton and blocked judges from entering the courthouse, so they couldn't hold court and conduct foreclosure proceedings. Shays took part in this and then led a similar group to intimidate the court in Springfield, so it adjourned without hearing any foreclosure cases. The situation continued to escalate throughout the fall, and Shays and other leaders made plans to raid the arsenal in Springfield to seize the weapons kept there so they could use them to try to overthrow the state government. On January 25, 1787, approximately 1,200 men advanced upon the arsenal. Some men had pistols and muskets, but many only had clubs and pitchforks. Unfortunately for them, a militia was waiting for them and opened fire. A few rebels were killed, and 20 were wounded. The survivors scattered to the countryside. Shays and his wife fled, and the rebellion was over. In response to the uprising, the legislature suspended debts and cut taxes, which eased the people's economic struggles. The rebellion highlighted the financial mess the nation found itself in and raised the question of whether or not such a weak national government would or could survive. In an attempt to address the flaws in the national government, delegates from across the country came together in what became known as the Annapolis Convention. They intended to fix the Articles of Confederation, but quickly realized they needed to scrap them and create an entirely new governing document. This is rather ironic, since Article 13 asserts, "And the Articles of this Confederation shall be inviolably observed by every state, and the Union shall be perpetual." So by perpetual, they meant 8.5 years. The final takeaway. Although the Articles of Confederation were a failure, they were important. Our founders learned from their mistakes and the weaknesses of the Articles, so the Articles prepared the way for the creation of the U.S. Constitution, which is the best governing document in the history of the world. We will learn more about the creation of the Constitution in the next episode of America's Godly Heritage. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a great day. Bye!
Help us spread our message. If you would like to learn more about America's Godly Heritage, or to support us with prayers or finances, you can find us on YouTube, Patreon, most podcast sites such as Buzzsprout and Spotify, and on social media, X, Truth, Instagram, and Facebook. You can view the resources used to make this podcast on YouTube, Vimeo, and Patreon. We really appreciate your support. Thanks again.